One other time while visiting in Portland, I made a presentation on chapter 10, Bhagavad Gita. Yes? Somebody remembers that? Opulences of the Absolute? No. Should I do it again? Because you didn't remember. Well, if these lights can go down, that would be better. Chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita is called the Most Confidential Knowledge. That's a nice place to speak about, the most confidential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. What's that most confidential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita? What's confidential knowledge? And then more confidential knowledge, and then most confidential knowledge. What's confidential? Something that's very near and dear to you. One kind of confidential is, psh, 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 don't tell anybody because it's confidential. Psh, 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 psh. That's one kind of confidential. But another kind of confidential is, wow, Hare Krishna. Another kind of confidential is directly relating to ourself, like knowledge of the soul. That's confidential knowledge. The chapter 2 is that confidential knowledge, distinguishing the covering of the soul from the soul, illusion from reality. That's confidential knowledge. And what's more confidential knowledge? What's more confidential knowledge? Distinguishing the individual soul from the supreme soul. There are some persons that have some understanding that there is a soul distinct from matter. But some of those persons think that that soul is God and that's who we are, we're God. So it's a more confidential distinction to understand the supreme soul distinct from the individual soul. That's more confidential knowledge. And then the most confidential knowledge? The relationship between the individual soul and the supreme soul, or devotional service. So this chapter 9 is that. In the end of chapter 8, Krishna has described that there are some persons that achieve the realm of the kingdom of God, and there are some souls that perpetually continue in the cycle of birth and death. So the means of achieving that eternal realm of the kingdom of God is chapter 9, to the most confidential knowledge. So, as you see, there's three main sections of this chapter, and we'll go through it piece by piece. The king of knowledge, who knows the verse? Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. What's the verse?
Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Shuskam Kartumam Vyayam.
And the translation, roughly?
This knowledge is the king of knowledge, the most secret of all secrets. And it gives a direct perception of the... And because it gives a direct perception of the self...
It is the perfection of religion.
It is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and joyfully performed.
Very nice. Susukam. Not only sukham, but susukham. Kartam avyayam. Joyfully performed. Everlasting and joyfully performed. Krishna begins the chapter by saying, "My dear Arjuna, because you have a certain qualification, I'm going to describe to you something that's more confidential than anything else described before." What's that qualification that Arjuna has?
Non-envious.
Yeah. He's non-envious of Krishna. He's his dear friend. Or because he's elsewhere, Krishna says, because you're my devotee as well as my friend, you will understand the message I'm going to express to you. So we'll go through this first section up to, well, we'll cover a little bit ahead. No, we'll go do this.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed."
So that's the introduction. The qualification to understand, as Arjuna's understanding, is being free from enviousness of Krishna. And now Krishna is going to next describe what's the consequence of not having faith in his words and the consequence of having faith in his words. The faithful and the faithless. This is, overall, it's describing the qualification to receive transcendental knowledge, or this most confidential knowledge. Non-enviousness and faith are important qualifications.
"Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world."
Remember from chapter 8, Krishna has described these two paths. The path where one achieves the spiritual world and the path where one continuously experiences birth and death. So now he's entering into this is the means and how to achieve it. So he's identified these two very important qualities: not being envious of Krishna, being faithful in Krishna's words. So one might ask, if this is such a magnificent process, why doesn't everybody take it up? And the answer is because they're lacking in faith. And there's different ways or reasons or levels of lack of faith. Sometimes persons are just, they simply don't know any better. They're ignorant. They don't have access to the scriptures, and so they're living their life in that way. But then there's some persons that do have access, but they just don't believe in it. They have no faith. And sometimes they're some faith, but they're hesitating. They're holding back. They can't give themselves to the process. Always doubting, always hesitating. Even knowing what Krishna's words are, they still can't accept that position of devotion unto Krishna. Sometimes they think it's an exaggeration or hyperbole or some eulogy, not something they can really place their faith in. Something sentimental, not scientific. Or just so absorbed in sense gratification, they can't apply themselves in a serious way. So we know this example. Children, who's this guy over there? Dr. Frog. What's the story of Dr. Frog? He lives in the bottom of a well. And somebody comes to Dr. Frog in the bottom of a well and says, "My dear friend, Dr. Frog, I'd like to tell you of a body of water that's so much bigger than this well. You could hardly even imagine it." So what does Dr. Frog say? "Well, how much bigger than this well? Is it twice as big?" "Oh, no, no, it's much bigger than twice as big." "Is it four times as big?" In this way, Dr. Frog is trying to imagine what the great ocean is in comparison to the size of his tiny well. And same way, persons of this world are trying to imagine the spiritual world, the realm of the kingdom of God. And how much greater is it than this realm? Is it twice as big? Is it four times as big? So they can't really have faith in the vastness of the spiritual world any more than Dr. Frog, within his tiny experience, can have faith in the vastness of the ocean. And so they maintain their position of faithlessness. Now what's the opposite? The position of faith, we find out from Chaitanya Charitamrita, is unflinching trust in something sublime. That simply by one thing, attaining Krishna Bhakti, Sarva Karma Kritahoya, everything desirable can achieve by getting this one thing. That's faith. And that faith manifests itself by recognizing that if we simply place our faith upon the source of all existence, Krishna, just like by watering the root of a tree, all the parts and leaves and leaves and branches and twigs and fruits and flowers and all the parts of the tree will receive water. Just give water to the root of the tree. So find the root of existence. And wherever that, whatever that root of existence is, give your attention there. The root of existence is Krishna. So by achieving this devotion to Krishna, everything else is achieved. This is faith. And what's the factors that make progress of spiritual life successful? It's faith. Practical faith. So that any reluctance, hesitation, complacency, distraction, things that hold us back, we go beyond that when faith is strong, that we take shelter of the service of Krishna. This painting is part of the picture of the prostitute who, through association with Haridas Thakur, her faith became so strong. Her abominable profession was given up, and she took full shelter in the holy name and became an elevated pure Vaishnava. Persons came to worship her when previously her character was very lowly and unfortunate. And if we don't have faith in Krishna's words, what happens? We'll have faith in something else. That's chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita. Faith in wealth or success or strength or beauty. Something will place our faith somewhere if we don't place our faith in Krishna. So if this faith is such an important thing, where do we get it? They don't have it in Walmarts and Costco, and it's not available, but it's available through the association of devotees. Just that the Intel program, we heard of one woman, practically she was crying, describing that for 16 years she was married to a very successful man and she lived up on the hill, I don't know what that means, some, you know, big house with fancy cars and nice clothes and travel to Europe and zoom zoom, top of the world, and the whole thing came tumbling down, finished. And then she met her new husband, and in 2 years' time she's understood all of that was false shelter, just through association with a person that had deep faith in God. and her whole life is, she was crying, my whole life has changed. And now I don't have all those things, I'm living very simply, but I'm very happy because I'm abiding in faith with God. That's a very nice testimony. So how does that faith come about? It comes about from association with those who have faith, with devotees of the Lord. By hearing from them respectfully, like Maharaj Pariksit heard from Shukadeva Goswami, or the picture on the right when devotees came and sat before Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada was describing Krishna's message from Bhagavad Gita, and that stirred faith in their hearts so much so they could give their whole lives, everything, simply to carry out that message of Bhagavad Gita throughout their life and throughout the world. This is how valuable faith is, and devotee association is to gain that faith. And after hearing from them, trying to serve them with humility, just as Maharaj Pratap Rudra, by getting the association to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he felt he had achieved the perfection of his life. What happened here? It's going backwards. What? You're okay? Okay. A classic example of one who has benefited from the process of hearing is Narada Muni. You know the story of Narada Muni? Your daughter knows the story of Narada Muni? Doesn't remember. Okay, pay attention, then you can know about this life of Narada Muni, because we're going to summarize it. Just as it was presented in the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni describes to his disciple Vyas how he achieved spiritual perfection in a previous day of Brahma. In that previous day of Brahma, he was an insignificant nobody. He was a young boy who was the servant, or the son of a maid servant. Didn't even know who his father was. His father was perhaps deceased or whatever. And assisting his mother, whose job it was to take care of people who came to an inn or like a dharmshala, a place where pilgrims would come during the 4 months of the rainy season. They stayed in that ashram, and little Narada was engaged in their service. He would bring their meals, he would wash their clothes, he would do whatever little errands they wanted, and basically just got their association. And because he was very mild in his disposition, they felt very affectionate towards the young boy, and they demonstrated their goodwill. They allowed him to hear their teachings and their discussions, and as he inquired further, they explained more and more, and he became very attracted to their teachings. Once, they even gave him permission to take the remnants of their food. And when he took the remnants of their food, he experienced how his sins were at once eradicated. And he felt he was becoming purified in their association. So much so that worldly existence became less and less attractive, and transcendental life became very attractive to him. He describes to Narada Muni, or to Vyasa, excuse me, that his taste in hearing that their topics became stronger and stronger each day. And the realization that he was getting was his real identity was not this covering of a little boy, but his real identity was an eternal spirit soul with a gross and subtle covering, but his real identity was a spiritual being. And that the Lord who was situated within his heart was accompanying him in a very loving manner. He achieved these realizations even though he was just very small. And he hankered to return to the personality of Godhead in the course of his life by the mercy of these great saintly persons. They taught him a process of meditation and chanting of Vedic mantra. And then they left. Then one day, his mother, when going to the well to gather water, she was bitten on the leg by a poisonous serpent and instantly died. Now imagine, small boy, just 5-6 years old, doesn't have a father. Now he doesn't have a mother. Doesn't have any means of support. But because of that wonderful association he had achieved, he somehow took this as some plan of the Lord, meant for his well-being and his mercy, and thinking in that way, he immediately left the place and began journeying, traveling through all different parts of the country. He described to Vyas that he passed through flourishing metropolises, towns and villages, into the forests, seeing snakes and owls and jackals, and going fearlessly because he was fixed on this spiritual conception of himself and the others who were inhabitants in the forest. And each day, morning and evening, he would perform this meditation that he was taught by the Bhaktivedantas. And one of those days, when he was fixing his mind upon the Supersoul situated within his heart, suddenly that form of the personality of Godhead appeared on the lotus of his heart, and he saw that form of the Lord. And he was stunned. His whole body began to tremble, and he was feeling great ecstasy, and then suddenly that form disappeared. And when that form disappeared, his meditation broke and he looked around. Where is my Lord? And he couldn't see him anywhere. And then he heard this voice. The Lord was speaking to him. I've shown you special mercy. Actually, unless one is fully qualified, one is not able to see me. I don't show myself. But to encourage you, I've shown my form in this way so that you'll follow this instruction for the rest of your life. Continue in the same way, and you will achieve spiritual perfection. Little boy. So his rest of his life, he lived that way. And then he described to Vyas that at the time of death, his mind completely fixed upon the personality of Godhead, he at once gave up his material body and achieved a spiritual form. Just like lightning and illumination occurs simultaneously. So, being a fully surrendered soul, fixed in transcendental consciousness, by the Lord's arrangement, he was drawn within the body of Mahavishnu, and during the next day of Brahma, he took birth as one of Brahma's sons, 4,320,000,000 solar years later. That's a long time. But he took birth as Narada Muni, the very elevated Vaishnava. And in this way, by the grace of the personality of Godhead, by simply playing upon his veena, he can, and calling the names of the Lord, he can travel anywhere in the material creation and in the spiritual realm, unrestricted, simply to carry out the service of the Lord. So in this way, Narada describes how faith through association can carry one all the way to the stage of spiritual perfection. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the first verses, this first section, Krishna is also indicating to Arjuna how important faith is, without which repeated birth and death in the material world is certain to take place.
Krishna's unmanifested form pervades everything, but Krishna himself remains detached from matter. Material nature, working under his direction, produces all moving and non-moving beings.
So now comes a description of Krishna's relationship with the creation. Because if we're going to understand Krishna, we need to understand what this material world is in relation to him. It's a very deep section. It's Krishna's describing the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced. The relationship that Krishna has of simultaneously the oneness of all things with Krishna, at the same time the difference of all things from Krishna. As I was saying yesterday, the Upanishadic double talk of Krishna. Everything is within Krishna, and everything is not within Krishna. Krishna is inside of everything, and Krishna is outside of everything. Those are contradictory statements. Now how does this work? Krishna explains. Ultimately, it's his mystic power. And how do you understand the mystic power of the supreme mystic? You can't understand it by material conception. It's beyond material conception. But that ultimately Krishna is the rest and support of everything, which comes from him, and he's maintaining and is the basis of everything. So there's this oneness and difference relationship of all things with Krishna. That's necessary to understand, to go more deeply into the realm of devotional service. So now we'll see how Krishna does this, presents this for Arjuna's sake.
By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence.
Everything rests in Krishna, but everything is not within Krishna. So Krishna is going to explain this nicely to Arjuna.
Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot find me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti. Producing all moving and non-moving beings. Foolish persons do not know Krishna's transcendental and supreme nature.
once again to understand Krishna properly, to become attached to Krishna, one has to understand, as we were speaking yesterday, how distinct from Krishna is this material energy. And yet the material energy doesn't operate on its own. It acts under Krishna's direction. But while things are acting under Krishna's direction, he's described, actually, personally, he's doing nothing. It's just simply being carried out by his will. Everything is happening, but not even a blade of grass moves without Krishna's sanctioning for that blade of grass to move. There are no events, there's no third thing besides Krishna and Krishna's. There's not void in creation. We were discussing at Intel, this discussion little thing of some power, satanic power, but struggling against God, and sometimes Satan's got the upper hand, and sometimes God's got the upper hand, and it's not like that at all. Nothing can happen without the sanction of the personality of Godhead. There's one supreme controller, not an opposing bad controller. Now, to understand Krishna's position is the situation of a great soul. But as we're hearing, to make the distinction, there are persons that are not great souls. There's some persons that mistakenly identify who is Krishna or who is God. And to enter into the realm of devotional service, we have to have the proper conception. So Krishna is supplying that for us. Here we go.
Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the supreme personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glories, bowing down before me. These great souls perpetually worship me with devotion.
So there are those that have faith, and based upon faith, when they hear the glories of Krishna and the position of Krishna, even in relation to the material world or in the spiritual world, they're able to take up that message and engage simply in serving him. And then they have certain behaviors as they're serving him. They derive great bliss and satisfaction, enlightening one another and conversing about Krishna, and they perpetually worship Krishna with devotion. And then there's the other kind. As the chapter began describing, the theme is being continued. There are those that are foolish. They cannot repose their faith in this way. So they engage in other types of activities. Oh, I think I made a mistake. I skipped a section. No, I didn't. So now, That distinction between the faithful and faithless is moving into different ways in which people identify their object of worship. Worship of Krishna as the Supreme Personality and Godhead, or worship of something else. What happened? So, first Krishna is going to describe the other types of worshippers, those that don't worship him. And then he's going to describe those that do worship him indirectly, and then he's going to describe those that worship him directly. In other words, put it this way. It is said that a good definition is both inclusive and exclusive. By that, when you're saying what something is, you say this is what it is. But just so that you're really clear, it's not that. Let's say we want to talk about what. Can you get me some? You're going to India. Can you buy me a pair of cartels? Cartels, what are cartels? It's a kind of symbol, but it's not like those ones they play, you know, with drumsticks and a big symbol. It's little small ones. But it's not, you know, the real, real small ones. It's about this big, and they have ridges in them, and there's a little hole in the middle. So you describe what the thing is. And what the thing isn't. Like Rupa Goswami does this in Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. When he's talking about what bhakti is, the first part is he says what bhakti isn't. The exclusive part. Anyabhi lasha to shunyam jnana karma janavratam. That's what bhakti isn't. It's not speculative knowledge or fruit of activity. It's devoid of speculative knowledge and fruit of activity. That's what it isn't. So what is it? Inclusive, it's engaging in activities following the example of perfected souls in devotion to Krishna, in service to Krishna. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Ruchite Bhakti Uttama. So he's doing the same thing here. Krishna's doing the same thing by describing worship, the object of worship of those who have a mistaken understanding of God, and then those that worship him indirectly, then those that worship him directly.
Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge. Worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse and many, and in the universal form. But it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offerings of the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant, I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support and the grandson. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier and the syllable ohm. I am also the Rig, the Sama and the Yajur Vedas. I am the goal. The sustainer, the master, the witness. The abode, the refuge. And the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place. and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality, and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. Different worshippers reach different goals. Men who want to attain the heavenly planets worship the demigods, and then take birth among them to enjoy godly delights. But such men, after exhausting their pious credits, return to earth. Men who worship ancestors go to the planets of the ancestors, and those who worship ghosts become ghosts. The one who worships Krishna with exclusive devotion goes to him forever.
So two things from the previous section. Krishna's described indirect forms of worship. He's described ekatvena, those who worship him as one without a second. Prataktvena and Bahuda Vishvato Mukham. Those who Prataktvena Bahuda is the worship of demigods, and Vishvato Mukham, those who worship the universal form. So those are three stages of worship. Now he's going to elaborate more on demigod worship. Bahuda Prataktvena, those who worship me as many. Bahuda, the demigods. In a very generous way, in that part of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, they're worshipping me, but indirectly. Now he's going to speak a little bit differently about it. They have a wrong understanding. But where we're going with all this discussion, where Krishna is going with all this discussion, is to make it very clear what devotional service is, what this most confidential knowledge is, what can take one to that eternal abode of Krishna, and otherwise not. Then, because coming up will be the, in this section, is the different destinations. It's not that any way you worship takes you to the same destination. It's different modes of worship according to faith of the worshipper.
Those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purify the simple reactions they take care from the pious heavenly planet of Indra. For they enjoy godly delights. When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating in my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack.
Message in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and now in, for the purpose of being exclusive what Shuddha Bhakti or pure devotion is, he's saying here persons with some devotion but misplaced. They do so avidhi purvakam. They do so in the wrong way. So now back to our watering the root of a tree example. Someone who pours water on the leaves and branches of the tree without pouring water on the root of the tree, same. It's not proper knowledge of how to nourish the tree. Same way, someone may want to satisfy different parts of their body, and so they'll do different things to satisfy different parts of the body, but the simple method is you put food in the stomach. In the same way, there's needs and desires of living beings who are embodied. Due to poor fund of not understanding the personality of Godhead as that source that nourishes everything, from him everything comes, then this demigod worship becomes something that attracts their attention. Something for this need, something for that need, and something for the other need. When in fact, the benefit that the demigods can supply comes from the same Supreme Lord. So, Avidhi Purvakam, Krishna states in this chapter 9. It's done in the wrong way, with misunderstanding.
I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me.
Okay, so that completes that second section. Now we're ready for the final section here.
Whatever Krishna's devotee does, he offers or gives away in charity, he does as an offering unto the Lord. Krishna reciprocates by carrying what his devotee lacks and preserving what he has. By taking shelter of Krishna, even low-born persons can attain the supreme destination.
Those who hear with faith the message of Krishna's position and try at least cultivate acting in that way, Krishna reciprocates. This is the special, munificent feature of devotional service. Krishna is a person, and Krishna hears their prayers, and Krishna accepts their service and reciprocates with them in a very personal way. That experience is not had by others.
If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O Son of Kunti, as an offering to me. In this way, you will be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me, in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. righteous and attain lasting peace. O Son of Kunti, declare it boldly that thy devotee never perishes. O Son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, Sudras, workers, can attain the supreme destination. How much more this is so of the righteous Brahmanas, the devotees, and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary, miserable world, engage in loving service unto me. Engage your mind, always thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me. And worship me.
Chapter. Krishna is described, he's elaborated on Yanti Deva Vrata Devan Pitrin Yanti Pitrin Vrataha. According to the faith, according to the type of worship one wishes to have, Krishna makes one's faith strong, and if one reposes one's faith in attaining the shelter of Krishna, Krishna takes one there. So the beginning of the chapter was Krishna's promising to explain the most confidential part of knowledge, that is, the relationship with Krishna, how to enter into the relationship with Krishna. So he's fulfilled that promise, and the end of the chapter is Krishna's taking one to him. Helping us to, in the course of understanding what devotional service is, strengthen our faith. Krishna presented, as he's going to do in the next chapter also, some of his opulences, and by hearing of Krishna's opulences to have a clearer idea and also appreciation of Krishna, so that we repose our faith fully in Krishna and not in something temporary or some other conception of the Supreme. And by so doing, we'll go back, having the mind fixed upon Krishna and always thinking of Krishna, becoming his devotee, offering obeisances to Krishna, and worshipping Krishna, then Krishna will take us to him. Being absorbed in this way, Krishna's promise, surely you will come to me. So, this verse, the last verse of the ninth chapter, that's the very middle of Bhagavad Gita, and our acharyas describe this very, very confidential part of Krishna's instruction sits right in the middle. And then again, what chapter 18 is, it's a repeat of information, the summary, contents of the Gita summarized, Prabhupada describes. So this very same idea is also presented in the very same language. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So that we can achieve Krishna's eternal association once again. Just like that nice picture that was there of the devotee chanting his japa before the deity, and the next he's in the spiritual world receiving Krishna's embrace. By practicing in our present position Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that will carry us to the spiritual realm. So that we can, in the practices, to achieve these four things: mind, always fixed upon Krishna, always engaging in all of our activities in service to Krishna, offering obeisances to Krishna, becoming always in a mood of serving Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So, we'll go to Krishna. That's the conclusion of the chapter.